is in the host meeting. Any suggestions on the subject matter or topics that actually you're looking at? I'm curious about. Why we're here, what's going on, where should we be going, what does it matter anyway? If someone asks you, what is your purpose? Suppose by their lifestyle, it's such that it makes them unhealthy. How would you feel as a doctor knowing that, like, you helped them, but then by the way they live, they were. How complete would that education be?
Depends how much they took in and if they actually can help them or if they just something to do.
We're just discussing. If someone asked you, what is your purpose? What would you say? What's it all about for you? Some have said, don't have a clue. Others have said, try to help people somehow make a difference. What would you say?
Myself?
Yeah.
I would say maybe reach the goal. Learn the truth.
Learn the truth.
If truth exists.
If truth exists. And how would you do that?
By whatever means comes to me. They're not completely in my control, but if it's possible to have. It all depends on circumstances.
All depends on the circumstances. Would you say is your purpose?
How to live together. Living together with everybody, the diversity.
Living together with everybody.
In peace and harmony, how we can live.
Do you have any ideas about that?
The thing is that I see that people of various culture, various ethnic group, various, but everyone is there is some harmony between in a kind of social. Well, I don't know. I feel like the folklore is a famous, it's a very much important connection with each all races, all culture, all faith.
Folklore of particular people?
No, when I see folk music, for example.
From where?
Well, if I go for Hungarian folk music, if I go for Turkish folk music, if I go for Indian folk music, I see there or flamenco, for example. find there's a harmony.
In
I don't know.
Each particular group or a global harmony?
I don't know about group or anything, but I'm thinking about there's a harmony. I have an interest in folk lyrics, so I find the beautiful common lyrics that we have, it has so commonality, so common feeling of emotion and desperation and thing of that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was listening to some African music, what they talk about, family life, or interpersonal feeling about things, and also plus Shami Akhenaten's the Bushnabi music, Bushnab, the mystic Bengali folk music, essentially Hindu religious music.
Bushnabiness?
Yeah, so those lyrics has something to do with whole global harmony. You know what I mean? So I find that is a kind of wonderful. I mean, in terms of ecology of mind, the whole thing is same. Up above it, we see disharmony. But if you see folk social spiritualism, there is a harmony there somewhere. I don't know whether I'm clear or not.
I understand.
Folklore.
I understand what you're getting at, but do you really think it's. I mean, folklore's been going on in the world for millennia. Has it really ever caused world peace and happiness? Because people identify with their body, they identify with their particular bodily group. And then there's discord. Of course, even within the same bodily group, there's discord.
I know the truth, but there are. I certainly feel some kind of harmony with that kind of folk musical space. You know, I find the whole. I'm not talking in terms of religion or anything. Spiritual, emotional linkage is so similar to see that same plane that we're living in, but we don't have much knowledge about that, maybe.
My university days, I was into similar things, but it's always a frustration that you may see these things, but very few people see them. That is really, the vision is not enough to produce any meaningful change in the world.
Well, you can say that, but maybe there is a vacuum there somehow. You may find it.
Interesting.
Well, what do you think needs to happen for your life so that you'll feel, yes, I've been successful? A successful doctor? Many people thanking you. Saved my life. Then you feel that your life has reached maximum potential?
I think so, yeah. I'll do what I can.
You'll do what you can, and then, assuming you make it to old age, then what? You'll just say, okay, I did my part in the world.
Yeah, fine.
And then, that'll be it. Just
yeah.
Who knows what happens next? You feel comfortable with that after a few short years of helping others, then you're forced to move on. And what happens next?
Okay, yeah, it's gonna be something I want to be, but I'll have to all of my difference. What happens next? Yeah. Yeah. I don't like having it around. People thinking it's about doing stuff like that.
So it doesn't bother you, like? After all that effort, then that's it.
Because that's not it. People will help.
Then they'll hit a wall, and that'll be it for them, too. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, cookie crumbles.
Mm-hmm.
Did you accept that?
In a sense, because like the girl was saying, if like people she's helped can then go on to help other people, and it's not necessarily stopping, it's just a continuous change. Just because you're not able to do anything more, doesn't mean that help isn't going to be there. You'll like have your place in the chain or whatever.
So, one after another, everyone will just hit this wall and that'll be it.
It shouldn't necessarily be seen as a wall, because, okay, so you might not be able you're not able to do as much as you can, could before, or you're not able to help in the same way, but there will be other ways you can help. And it's more of a passing on of being this knowledge or whatever.
But what will happen to you? Like you. Okay, I've helped, I've given my best, and now that's it for me. What happens next, I don't know.
You shouldn't look at it as it so pessimistically and say, oh, damn, I've hit a wall, there's nothing more I can do. You should possibly look on to achieve all that.
Right.
Whatever other aims you might have in mind.
Yeah. After this life is over, or? It's like, let's say you had a really good friend. I do to my friend. Really good friend. So, and you really clicked, and you defied the odds, and you stayed together. And but then comes that moment in everyone's life in which, you know, the body breaks down, and that's it. So you wouldn't feel like, oh, this isn't right. I just want to stay with her. Like, I mean, wow, we have such understanding built up over 30 years now. We were one of the rare couples who stayed together. I mean, you know, symbiotic relationship. But you would like be terrified?
Well, probably. Well, there's times I would be, but at the same time, you have to think that you've had those 30 years, and it has been whatever. You shouldn't like strive to find more. You didn't tell me about the past.
Yeah.
So you just say, hey, okay, it was good while it lasted. I gotta move on, where I'm going, I don't know.
I probably wouldn't say that, but it's nice thing I could.
And you finally got to say it. Yeah. Oh, no, why? What happened there without me? Yeah? I don't mind dying, but it's her. What will happen to her? Oh no. After I'm gone, let it be someone else. Oh, well, maybe I should be practical. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I said, look, you know, you've been good to me. I know that, you know, after a while you're going to get lonely, so yes, you have my permission to. Yeah. Hey, couples do that, you know. Don't feel like you're hurting me, that you do. But, you know, everyone needs company. I'm moving on, so just do what you gotta do. Did you say that?
No.
You do that, I'll come back to haunt you. What would you say?
I wouldn't say anything because, okay, so like, if I did die or whatever, and then, I wouldn't be there to her.
You wouldn't?
I wouldn't be
But I wouldn't blame myself. She wouldn't be hurting me because I'm gone. Therefore, she speaks to what she wants.
What do you say, though?
Thanks.
What would you expect? That you that he would want you to cherish his memory, right?
First of all, we're friends. We're not a couple. So, you know, when he dies, it won't be a question of him giving me permission to move on to someone else. I mean, I hope that we'll still be friends in 30 years' time. What are you asking? What will I think when he dies? What will I do when he dies?
Let's just pretend you were a couple.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's pretend. Yeah. So what...
Would you? You know... He's going, and... Would you just grieve for a while, and then... everybody needs company, so...
Well, I've just started developing an interest in spirituality and stuff like that, and I've been reading about the afterlife. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that when someone dies, it shouldn't be a time for grieving because their spirit lives on and everything. And yeah, obviously I would grieve for myself for a certain period of time because, whether he's a good friend or partner, obviously I'm going to miss him and it's going to be a big life change. But at the same time, I personally think it would be a waste if I didn't carry on with my life. I mean, what good am I doing to his memory or to myself if I'm just sat there? If I don't go out and meet other people, make new friends.
So it's kind of like, get it while you can.
Well, it's kind of, live for the moment, really.
Live for the moment.
Because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You never know what's going to happen next week in 10 years' time.
You would also do that? Live for the moment?
Yeah.
Do while you can. Get it while you can. Get it while you can. Give what you can. Take what you can.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's easy to say that, not so easy to do, though, isn't it? Because everyone's sat there thinking, oh, God, I need to work, I need to save money, I need to have a pension, blah, blah, blah. So, as much as we would love to live for the moment, I don't think everyone should.
It's a very intelligent point. Yes, you're piercing the illusion. In other words, people say, live for the moment, get it while you can, but they're always laying up stock for the future. Is this just some kind of irrational hang-up or something? It's like, most of you here, you're going to university? Why? It's live for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? Well, I am. I get to watch daytime TV. I get to run in.
But why did you enroll in the university in the first place? You want to be a doctor. That's a long course of study, isn't it?
Yeah.
7 years?
No,
five.
Yeah. Not so much this moment, but this for your lifetime, and then don't worry about what happens after you die or whatever.
You could settle for that. Or you should not even live for the lifetime, just for the moment right now.
See, the reason I'm going to university is because I just wanted to do it. I've worked, I've travelled, and I've never gone to university, and I wanted to try it, so I did. And I may finish the course, and I may not finish the course.
Oh, really a free spirit.
I'm too free.
So what might be
Would you... opt for more of a lifetime?
Yeah, the moment.
The moment. So you're in the university also, so you're with...
Well, I'm at university to learn about what I'm learning. I want to be interested in the subject, not because I want to necessarily have a career in the subject.
It's not something that, because I could be in a job now, but that, surely that would be what I was learning for, I'm living for the lifetime, to be working in a job, to build up a good career and get promoted. So no matter what you do, it can be turned around to be seen as you're living for the lifetime.
And what would you say? Live for the moment, or should you have future plans, or anyway, regardless, if you say you're living for the moment, everybody has future plans.
Yeah, one day I'll achieve what I want to do, after nourishing and achieving that goal, I might die.
But you'll be satisfied because you've achieved your goal.
Well, it's very confusing. I want to achieve, along with materialistic way of materialistic livelihood, along with spiritualism, if I achieve that simultaneously, that would be a kind of a real goal to achieve.
It's interesting, this point about we kind of feel like, well, it's just the moment, the present moment, but then everybody's always making future plans. So the question the ancient Vedic sages of India would ask is, why does your future planning stop at death? Why can't you plan beyond death also? Now in Bhagavad Gita, the classic text, Lord Krishna explains that just like the child has a future, the child becomes a teenager. Teenager has a future, teenager becomes a young adult. Young adult has a future, he or she becomes an adult. Then there's old age. The old person also has a future, death. But death also has a future, rebirth. So Lord Krishna explains that for one who has died, birth is certain. And for one who has taken birth, death is certain. It's a cycle. But somehow or other, this particular part of so-called human civilization just focuses on the one life is all in all. The majority of the world isn't like that, actually, in terms of population. Most people in the world do accept that life goes in cycles. It's only the Western world which has this linear conception that your life goes from point A to point B, and then that's it. Either there's heaven, hell, or nothing. So a unique view, especially when you look at nature. What do you look at? What do you see when you look at nature?
I see God
manifesting in what way?
Sorry?
Manifesting in what way?
I see the manifestation of God, the live world.
What's going on in the live world? When you go out in the forest, go out in the country, what do you see? Have you got to the point of your medical studies where you study bodies yet?
Oh, I'm good.
So what do you see when you look at life or nature? You see cycles. Just like winter follows autumn, spring follows winter. So all of life is always moving in cycle. If you go to a forest, you see the whole cycle. The trees growing, then the trees die, and the vegetation from the tree nourishes the soil, and new trees come up. And it's a cycle. So why is it that human life is not a cycle? Some or other human beings just appear out of nowhere and disappear into nowhere. In terms of their existence. Every time you look at nature, you always see a cycle. This follows that and comes around to this again. But why is it when it comes to our existence, it's just point A to point B, finished? Unnatural. Most cultures of the world accept the cycle.
When you say rebirth, you mean like literally being born again as a human being?
Or is something.
What's it say in the text? Is it being born again by everything that's alive? Does it mean just being like you die and then you become something that's alive, not necessarily a human being?
Well,
or do you become a tree?
Trees are living. There's life in so many forms. The ancient Vedic knowledge will teach you that according to your consciousness at the time of death, you get a particular body in the next life. It all depends on your state of mind. The basic principles of changing bodies from one life to another are given by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Your consciousness at the time of death is very important. It's the indicator of where you're at and what kind of body you should have in your next life. Your consciousness at the time of death generally is a culmination of your lifetime. I don't know if you've ever talked to people who've almost died. Often they'll tell you they went through an experience called a life review. They can see their whole life pass before their eyes in a few seconds. You ever talked to anyone? Yeah, someone's almost drowned or something like that. You've never heard? Yeah. They told you?
Yeah.
Who's that?
My auntie's friend, he nearly died. And he had like a 40% chance of survival or something. But he chose to go ahead with the operation or whatever. He said he saw his life.
So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that at the moment of death, your consciousness, which is generally the sum total of where you've been at all your life, that takes you to your next body. Because not everybody needs a human body. Did you ever think about it like that? Not everybody needs a human body. What is the advantage of a human body? What would you say is the advantage of a human body?
Advantage of human body?
Ooh.
Is it a mundane reality?
Ooh.
I see it's a mundane reality. I mean, day-to-day interaction, living together, having a...
Oh, you haven't studied.
Procreation.
You haven't studied biology. There's so many species of life that are better at living together than human beings. Bees in a beehive.
Yeah.
They call prairie dogs in the States. Much more communal species. Yes, much more communal species than human beings. So what's the advantage of the human body? The animals also have their practical affairs.
To live in a community?
Oh, but we've already said. Where is the human society with labor relations as smooth running as in a beehive? Or an ant colony?
Ant colony.
And where? So what's the advantage of the human body? What would you say is the advantage of the human body?
Dream.
Okay. 1980s. There was a nature presentation of tigers. And so the female tiger, it was that time of the year, and she was manifesting female tiger desires. She was in the mood for romance. So when that happens, the female tiger doesn't have to buy perfume. Finacious or agent, she gives off a special fragrance that a male tiger can pick up on 2 miles away. Very convenient. But I have to work hard and buy the latest perfume. So the male tiger smells the fragrance and he comes to visit. And so what happens is he shows up. No, she growls at him. Just drives him away. Then what does he do? No, he comes back. He doesn't give away, he comes back. And again, happens 3 or 4 times. And one time he comes back, and all of a sudden she's all lovey dovey. So then they cohabit, and baby tigers are born. And as soon as the baby tigers are born, what does the male tiger do? Nope. I lied.
This is a bye-bye.
Huh?
This is a bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, then the female tiger raises the cubs. So there's affection. I can see in the nature movie. First the female tiger is playing hard to get. Growling. But then, after the male tiger had, demonstrated his perseverance, she accepted him as for real. This must be the real thing. This tiger must really be sincere. So then all of a sudden you can see she's really lovey-dovey, making purring sounds in her throat.
So you say in other words the human existence is for desire?
No, but I'm pointing out there that animals are affectionate to each other.
Well, what's the difference?
According to the current human standard.
You can be affectionate to someone and not love them.
Well then, what's special about so-called human love as opposed to tiger love?
I don't know.
You can go to a zoo and study. Do you have a zoo here in Memphis?
Chester.
You can watch the monkeys, the gorillas, chimpanzees.
I think we also the same sort of animal.
So what is the advantage of the human body? What do you think?
I think there is no difference between the human body and the animal. We have got intelligence, but we are not using it properly.
What is it that a human being can do better than an animal?
Willpower.
Willpower? Would you have been determined as the tiger, the male tiger? Come back 5 or 6 times, get swatted in your face with a claw and still come back.
One of our things, when you're talking about this after death thing, just remind me of why should be a rebirth as a, again, a human thing? It can be something else, some of the living beings. One of the Bengali poets called Jivananda, she said, when I die, let me come back in the body of a soft, bright orange. Kamala Libu means an orange, a lemon.
Mm-hmm.
You know the fruity lemon, that kind of thing? Maybe what he meant by grape or something like that. This is kind of a subtle desire that he expressed, that when you die you will come in a shape of an orange, you know, that kind of. That's the first reincarnational image that I got from the Bengali poetry reading.
So my question is, what's the advantage of the human body? So you're saying affection. Then we realize that. Animals also can be affectionate. I mean, it looks like love.
We can build stuff.
Oh, animals are expert at building. You ever see a wasp's nest, or a beehive, or an ant's nest?
Like, sissies and cars and technology and stuff. If an animal gets sick, they can't make medicine to kill them. Unless the tiger's got cancer, the other tigers don't go up.
Well, maybe. Don't many researchers think that cancer is caused by artificial...
Mm-hmm. Maybe not cancer, but that's caused by,
And also, farmers will tell you that if you let cows eat the proper diet, they made studies in England, cows eat the proper diet, they automatically eat things that heal them. But if they're factory farmed, feed, then they get sick very easily. But if cows, which are particularly from a particular region, eat the natural vegetation of that region, they're automatically, by nature's arrangement, eating things that cure them of whatever diseases they may pick up. Then you made another good point, that animals can't do technology. But where is a human being that with his or her saliva can make a web? Animals can do amazing things.
But it's a God creature, given by God.
One scientist was saying that it'll take at least another 100 years for scientists to be able to construct a smelling apparatus as accurate as a dog's nose. So you say it's God-gifted. But still my question is, what's the advantage of having a human body? You all have human bodies, what's the advantage?
Being habits and building bridges. I don't know.
Building bridges between who?
Between one to one. Between community, community. I don't know.
You ever seen the School of Dolphins? Very communal. Animal packs have leaders, you know?
Yeah. But without a leader, we can bridge the gaps and things like that.
So no one can tell me, what is the advantage of having a human body? Very important.
How about the ability to think, to make their own choices?
Mm-hmm.
Can animals do that?
Some can to a limited degree. Limited degree. But anyway, if the human choices are simply for the same goals that the animals pursue, then what's the advantage of the wider range of human choice? If the end result is the same.
I think the end, ultimate end, is to reach God, or, you know, to serve the truth of the transcendental force of the world.
It's true that we don't see any animals at a gathering like this.
let you know that human beings have an advantage. They can inquire what is the ultimate goal of life.
Yeah.
You don't see animals sitting around, you know, well, why am I a chicken? How is it that I got this chicken body? It's just not happening. They don't have identity crises. They don't get depressed. So
they might have, isn't it? They don't have. They have.
So wow. So obviously, human beings have some distinct advantage: the ability to inquire what is the absolute truth. But when you compare bodily functions between human beings and animals, the animals are better. Name one bodily function that you can do better than an animal. Can you name any?
What?
Bodily function.
See.
See better than an animal? No way.
I'm sure I could see better than a cat or a dog or something, because some don't they have bad eyesight.
But others have eyesight far superior to you.
Yeah, exactly.
A vulture miles in the air can see a dead body on the ground. Did you think of anything that a human being can do better than an animal in terms of body function?
I don't necessarily believe that humans are better than animals. It's just our egocentrism tells us wrong.
I agree with you. These days human beings are worse than animals. I agree. It's not one bodily function. You can do better than animals than human beings. What about the almighty human activity? All the songs are about it. All the movies are about it. What about that? You see animals having to read books about it and watch movies about it. How to have, male-female affairs. A human being makes such a big deal out of it.
We are decent.
Hmm?
We are decent animal. Decent animal.
Now?
Our functional mode is different than animals.
Really? How do you figure that?
I don't know. There is some. There is some gaps which is maybe.
You haven't been to many parties lately, have you?
Phenomenal.
You don't go to parties, do you?
We are the best creature of the world.
You don't go to pubs on a Friday, Saturday night.
We're the best creature of the world among animal kingdom. We got an independent way of thinking.
My point is, every bodily function, an animal does better, including sex life.
How much is our like intellectual capabilities? Even though we don't put it to use, which obviously, it's like things
about brains. The human being, as we said, has the advantage of having the intelligence to inquire into what is the ultimate truth.
But how can we be sure that animals aren't inquiring into it? None of us are able to speak or communicate with animals in their way. They don't have their own language, so that's how we thought we know. They could be inquiring just as well.
True, but taking things at face value doesn't look like they're so concerned with these things.
But it's just a human egocentrical assumption.
Unless you can get your information from beyond the range of your senses, you get information which will let you know what all the different species are thinking. But it's true. You can only hypothesize that the animals are concerned with these things. But then, there's so many things we don't know for sure. It's like, you could very well take another body in your next life. Okay? You should be concerned. Not just, well, when it happens, that's it.
Say you
Bad person. What's a bad person?
Someone you don't like other people.
What does that mean?
Say you're a murderer.
Huh?
Say you're a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you killed many animals and you ate them.
You murder other people.
You went to McDonald's every day. Huh?
Other people,
I see. But why are we just concerned with people being killed? What about the other living in? You ever think when you sink your teeth into a Big Mac? You're biting into someone's body that's been killed?
No. Why not? It's not a person, it's an animal.
You ever had a pet? Have you ever seen anyone kill an animal?
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole disadvantage of a meeting, which you don't really see what's going on there. But the fact is, when you sink your teeth into a Big Mac, you're sinking your teeth into someone's body, right?
I don't agree with that, but...
Yeah. Well, what is it?
It's not someone.
It is processed and designed for...
It's not someone.
I personally don't think that animals are. I don't know, I just hope that they have like a physical soul, which is as well. Don't they have like a soul, I think? People
have a soul?
I think so.
Well, then...
Like, give them right and wrong, give them... No, give them bad. Like, it's an animal, like, quite happily killing another animal, and like, you're okay with it.
Human beings do it all the time. You say human beings will wipe out whole cities of each other. No problem.
Then we know it's wrong, but we still do it.
Oh, they know it's wrong?
Yes.
At least I don't know.
So my question was, after you're reborn, say you became a like a plant or something, mm-hmm. What would determine how you were reborn again? Like from a being a human to like say a beast or something. Like, could you live a good life as a beast or
become
a human, or
would
you
come back?
How
does
that work?
According to the ancient Vedic knowledge, besides the human species, your progress in the other species, animal, plant, so on, that happens automatically. But in the human species, you have choice.
Okay.
That's the advantage of the human species. Intelligence to make a choice. But if you waste that choice and waste that extra intellectual capacity, and it's a great tragedy. Human life is a junction. You can go up or down. So there's nothing a human body can do materially better than an animal body, except use intelligence for understanding what is the wholesome reality. But human beings, they're so hung up on sex life, and everything's got to have sex in it. It's got to be on TV, it's got to be in the movies, it's got to be in the books, it's got to be in your mind all the time. I saw one psychological test from the USA. Of course, it's different. But the average university student during a 1 hour lecture will think of sex life at least 64 times. I know it's not like that here. So that thing that's pushed at you as the main preoccupation, animals can do much better. Yeah? You know what pigeons are doing up in the trees all the time? 30 times a day. Can you match that? Can you match the pigeons?
No.
What's that?
No.
Can you match the pigeons?
No. Talking about something.
Oh. No, any guys would say, yeah. Why don't we get a pigeon? Nature will give you that chance. So when it comes to these basic bodily functions and mating, eating, sleeping. There's no one here who can hibernate all winter like a bear. You might feel like you want to, but you can't. You can't just eat anything and everything without getting sick. Even if you eat meat, you get sick, right? You know, you're the doctor, right?
Yeah, in India.
In India. Oh, there's no bad cow diseases around here? There's no scare from meat with problems in the world these days. Everyone knows. It would be better for you not to eat meat, but most people, well, I don't know. Because everyone knows it'd be better to stop smoking a cigarette, so let's still people smoke, right? Some of them eat meat because, what the heck, you know? You're going to die anyway, might as well have some fun before you die. So, I'm trying to isolate for you the special value of having a human body. And to show you, it's beyond the bodily functions that special value. The real love, real helping for people, means to work with them to help them use the special gift they have. That's real help. That's real love. Like if you said to someone, you know, I'm going to give you the greatest love. I'm going to work together with you so that we understand our identity beyond the body. How's that? You don't know about that one, huh? You don't know about that one, huh?
No.
It's kind of fun having a body, huh? Having a body has its high moments and its low moments. Packed in with the body is disease, old age, and death. Birth is also miserable. How many of you remember your moment of birth? You remember your moment of birth? Why not?
Well, they say that's the most traumatic time we have, and we should remember it because of it.
Yes, it is. What happened to you before you popped out of your mother's womb?
I was in the womb.
Yeah. So do you think you became conscious as soon as you popped out of the womb, whereas before that there was no consciousness?
No, I believe there was consciousness.
Yeah. And so it was a traumatic experience. And the culmination was popping out of your mother's womb, and then, you know, someone cutting the umbilical cord, and huge trauma. Can you imagine what it's like being packed up in your mother's room, your back arched? She's eating all sorts of hot, spicy things, and you're feeling it. Or maybe she's taking drugs and it's going into your system too. So that's a huge misery birth. And then disease, old age, and death. These are the real secrets of the body. Real love, real affection means to work with someone to get beyond the bodily pleasures and pains, which are available for animals, and to develop spiritual pleasure from your spiritual identity in relation to the supreme spiritual identity. So Krishna consciousness means understanding yourself as spirit soul and understanding the supreme spirit soul of Krishna. Then there can be real helping and real love. But as long as we're simply thinking I'm this body, then we're trapped on a platform of deterioration.
So what are you apart from, according to Krishna, what is spiritual pleasure?
Yes. First, you need to understand that there's a difference between yourself and the body. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no meaning to spiritual.
Yeah.
Do you accept that?
Yeah. But what is the
What is your spiritual pleasure?
Yes.
The spiritual pleasure comes in relationship with the supreme spiritual person. You like relationships with persons, but the body and mind are always causing problems, right?
Yeah.
In a relationship. That's very good. Most people can't see that. I think the body and mind in a relationship is bringing so many pleasure. As you see, it causes problems, yeah? There's hope for some happiness, but there's always so many complications, right? You would agree? You would agree, Jim?
Okay.
We found something we agree on. You would agree? You would agree? You would agree? Thank you. Wow, okay. Everyone has experienced the body and mind. You think it's the gateway to relationship nectar. But just by having a body and mind, complications are there, misunderstandings. I don't know the pains of your body or the pleasures of your body because I'm in my body. But the hope is, before you realize it's not going to happen, the hope is I'll be in a relationship with someone and that person will know just what my body needs. Right? And then the further hope, I'll be in a relationship with someone and that person will know exactly where my mind is at, what my mind needs. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, how long does it take before you realize it's not going to happen? So then what do you do? Cry and say, well, I'll never fall in love again, right? Until next weekend. Very good. So what to do then? Everyone can understand the body and mind cause problems and complications. How do we relate to people as spirit soul? Relating to people as spirit soul means going beyond these bodily and mental complexities to the real common thing that everyone possesses. Beyond temporary folk culture, there is their eternal spiritual identity. And their eternal spiritual identity is in relation to the supreme spiritual person. Just like you are tiny spiritual sparks, there's also the supreme spiritual, and relationship is meant to be there. In the relationship between the living entity and Krishna, there's no impediment caused by the mind and the body. The mind and body are just coverings of the spirit soul. So the real freedom in relationship and self-expression is simply on the spiritual plane of life. The Krishna conscious plane of life. When you're a certain age and a certain stage of youth, you're really hopeful that the body and mind will lead you to a promising future for someone else's body and mind. Yeah? When you're a certain age, you think that? It seems natural, right? You're a young girl.
Oh, yes. It'll be nice. One body in mind, then another body in mind. Hopefully they're devoting some pleasure for each other. Seems quite natural, right?
Everyone felt like that at one time?
Yeah? Yeah? You felt like that?
Perfect. Yeah?
You felt like that? Yes, also? Mm-hmm. Yeah? There it is.
But then what happened? This didn't work out so easy, did it? Right? Didn't work out so easy. So now what? What now? What we should be doing is seeking our pleasure and affection on the spiritual platform of life. That's the most important thing. But in order to do that, you have to have information of the spiritual source of everything. this is the real purpose of human life. Not to simply get things, the animals get much easier or better. Well, the real purpose of the human form of life is that you must become enlightened. You must become spiritually realized. Krishna consciousness. That is what will make the difference. That's the actual purpose. Without that purpose, you're just groping, literally and figuratively, for the same thing as the animals get, without so much struggle. So it's a great tragedy when the human beings waste their life. Great tragedy. Waste their life striving for the same things the animals get. That's why an intelligent human being will get burned out simply trying for bodily pleasure. I'm sure quite a few have tried. You know, it seemed natural.
Yeah, let's just get into the body.
But you couldn't keep it up. You ever notice that? Can't keep it up, okay? At first it seems like, yeah, I've got a body, you've got a body, let's get into it, right? But then what happens? It just becomes distasteful, right? Boring, right? Well, they're not, why just sometimes? It was more than sometime, then you have no problem, you know, what you should be doing with your life.
Right.
It seems natural. I'm the body, you're the body, let's get into it and there'll be happiness. But then what happens?
Can we ignore the fact that there is happiness there also? Whatever. Is there no happiness? There's no spiritualism there at all?
Spiritualism in affairs of the body?
Not in that. We are looking at that. Don't we have...
There's some hint of happiness, and that's what you pursue in the material activity. There's a hint. There's a glimmer. It's there. Yes, there's a glimmer. But to get that glimmer, you struggle so much. Remember? That glimmer? There is a glimmer there. I'm not saying there's nothing there. It's just a glimmer though. You struggle so much to get that. You know, there's so many complications. Sometimes you think, I almost had it. We almost had it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, that song, this time we almost had it all. Just get back. It was almost for real this time. But that glimmer is attractive, but it's like chasing a mirage because you can't. It just never fulfills you. That's because human life is meant for something else, and real, lasting, productive relationships are based on something else. They're based on working together to achieve the non-material reality. That is real care. That's real love, brothers. As long as you remain on the bodily and mental plane, that's complication, misunderstanding, you just, you know, like this all the time. And occasionally, and what do you end up saying? Well, I guess this is as best as it's going to get. So we might as well just... struggle on. So there's nothing wrong with having this aspiration for a satisfying relationship, but we should know it will not happen except on the spiritual plane of life. So you all have the duty to yourself and to others to make your life successful in terms of spiritual enlightenment, Krishna consciousness. And then you'll see the real love and affection of God in your daily dealings. It's like someone should say to you, I'm going to do my best so that you will not take another birth. How do you feel about that?
also quite good.
That's the greatest affection somebody can give you. But what do most people think is the greatest affection? Someone would whisper sweet nothings in your ear, right? Right?
Yeah.
Most people think, oh, what do you think is the greatest affection? You could show someone? What would you think?
For me, it's someone who's listening.
How many hours? I would like to give you an example. One famous American psychologist said, there's two words that men fear the most when they hear it from a woman. You know what those two words are? Right! It's like fear in their heart. Oh, it could be anything from, let's get a divorce, or let's have a baby, or let's do this, let's focus. So the psychologist advised, instead of the lady saying, let's talk, and just leaving it that, because the little man's imagination runs wild. They advise the lady to say, let's talk for 5 minutes about such and such subject. And then the man, okay. But just like the open-ended, let's talk. Men, in fact, we just don't know what they're going to be hit with.
What's the other word?
Let's talk, two words.
Oh, that's two words.
Yeah. Remember that.
Who's the psychologist talking about?
Ah, I forgot his name. Oh, this is quite well. What do you think about it? It's true. So anyway, the goal of the talking and the listening should be, how are we going to rise beyond the body and the mental to something that's lasting? Because the body and mind are temporary. If you accept that you have a spiritual identity, then we should be concerned. How do we relate to each other as spiritual entities who are part of the supreme spiritual entity? That is, understanding these things is the real use of the human intelligence. So what I'm doing is I'm just giving you a basic primary Krishna consciousness. And I hope that you'll pursue it further. So it's been very interesting discussing these questions and answers. I hope we've left you with something to think about. Well, anything else you want to discuss? What's next on the some snacks, some refreshments. So what I'm trying to show you is that Krishna consciousness has a practical basis in life. It's the utmost necessity. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? You're the doctor, so tell us.
That's the body function.
Yeah. Well, what's missing? Let's say.
In biological terms, your cells aren't getting oxygenated.
But let's say, your beloved is now laying on the floor, pronounced dead. And what do you usually say? He's gone, he's gone. No? But I will say, no, he's laying right there. What's the problem? What's gone? What's gone?
His brain's gone, he's not thinking.
So it's the secret's in the brain.
Yes.
You sure? You're speaking scientifically or wishful thinking?
Scientifically.
No, you're not speaking scientifically. You cannot demonstrate scientifically that the electrochemical reactions in the brain are the source of the self.
No, but how, like, the reaction is, like, what you do is you tell me about what goes up to the brain. Like, your brain says, okay, I'll live by it. You need to know.
But what about medically documented near-death experiences? You study those? In which a person is pronounced clinically dead, but they can remember everything that went on in the operating room from a vantage point above their bodies. Yes.
So is that what it is?
In other words, there's something about you that's different from the body and the mind. So the key, your key goal in life is to find that out. Once you find it out, you'll be in the position to share real affection. Which is what you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Right. Great. Without inquiring into these kind of spiritual discussions, our whole life is a defeat. Jump up and down, alive for a few moments, and then that's it. There must be something more. We've got to find that out. Otherwise, people can have healthy bodies, but their minds are crazy. And there's responsibility for dealing with others. Just like you two are friends, that's a responsibility. If you're a friend, you should be able to do something lastingly beneficial for them, and vice versa. So what do you think? What can you do for your lasting benefit?
Stay friends with
us. Are you ready for all this? But what is the point of it all?
Well, I'm bored of my own voice. I need to talk to listen to someone else.
How do you feel about it? All right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I like these honest guy. Most metal say that. Yeah, I can put up with it for now, you know. That's all right with you?
Yeah.
But suppose he can help you understand the spiritual reality.
Have and understand that. Am I going to learn that for myself and understand it?
That
we. I mean, you can talk to me about it.
And inspire you to take up techniques for experiencing the spiritual reality. That would be the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. I would like to just see you as old man, old woman, rocking chairs.
Do you remember? Years ago at the uni.
Buddhism is very good about minimizing your illusion, your material desire. But then after you do that, then what? Yes, but Buddha didn't talk about that.
What did he talk about then?
Just minimizing your illusion, but he didn't so much present what is the spiritual reality. So you could say that Krishna consciousness, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, take off at the point of freedom from material existence. Once you're free from illusion, once you're out of the matrix of illusion, then what do you do?
You don't have that.
It's a question of superior and inferior pleasure. If your life is full of superior pleasure, you really don't have the interest in the inferior pleasure. Would you play with dolls? Did you do it as a little girl?
Yeah.
Why don't you do it now? Where?
The pub.
What are the fun? Just out of curiosity, what are the fun things they do at pubs? Is it fun at the pub without drinking? Is it still?
No, you can have it. Yeah, not me personally.
The alcohol kind of adds the fun element.
Yes.
Yeah. Why? Yeah, we're intoxicated enough to begin with, thinking we're the body. So why add more on top of that? Yeah. Intoxication means forgetfulness. You want to forget, and you think in that way your life can improve. Forget the worries and anxieties of the day.
Yeah,
it's
fine.
Yeah, you just right?
Yeah.
Well, it's a bit all temporary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then what happens the next morning?
Yeah.
What do you think? It's all worth it for those few moments of exhilarating freedom?
Yeah, when you think about it, it's got easier to stand out and
but then the next morning you feel horrible. Yeah,
it's
not good. Huh? I couldn't go for that kind of play myself. When I was in university, I was thinking, I've got to have pleasure all the time. Not feel intoxicated Saturday night and feel horrible Sunday morning. It didn't make sense to me. So why can't I have it all the time? So I was asking, when you were a little girl, you played with dolls. Why don't you play with dolls now? No, do both. Why can't you do both?
She loved infancy.
Mm-hmm.
She loved the experience of infancy. She'd not experienced things. So.
Adults are just bigger versions of children. And you know, it's the men have their toys. Computers, cars.
Yeah.
The ladies have their toys. Cosmetics.
But they don't play with dolls anymore.
The men are the dolls.
We lost that time.
So once again, my point is, without our inquiring into What is spiritual knowledge? A life is a defeat. So the beginning of spiritual understanding, Krishna consciousness, is to accept that point. Unless I start inquiring into these things, they're just defeat. Most people, I agree, don't want to face this. What we try to do tonight is just have an introductory discussion, nothing in depth. So I hope to have left you with something to think about.
Obviously, you're not even somehow.
Are you
with? Yeah, not me. Just generally, how onward.
You take lessons how to get the supreme pleasure from the supreme source of all pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That is Krishna consciousness.
How do you
say
lessons from
it? Yeah, no.
Where?
Hmm?
Where do you get
them? That you have to look for. We cannot be.
Do you
not
see yourself?
No. Why? Are you becoming a doctor on your own?
No. How do you look in, perhaps, to help? You can't.
You're a tiny little thing, and you can speak similarly the supreme source of everything. Speaks. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how you can connect with him.
But it's not a simple thing.
It is simple. Get the right information and apply it. What I'm doing, you can do. Not the same style, but in general, what I'm doing, you can do. That's being a real doctor. So you're saying now your happiness is drinking and going to the pub and dancing.
For now, yeah.
How long will you be able to do that for?
Until university.
And then?
But you get pleasure from like meeting and you make new friends and you get a family and you
live happily ever after.
Sorry?
And live happily ever after.
Yeah.
In the divorce capital of Europe. That's the reality. And then you'll have kids, and right now the statistics are 1 out of 4 teenagers in the UK is a stress disorder. First reason is the dysfunctional parents, and the second reason is school pressure. So what are you going to do when your kids have stress disorder?
Find
so they say, what does it matter anyway? There's just no point to life. What would you tell your kids?
What does it matter? There's just no point to it all.
Think about it.
I'll just, you know, you just gotta get a good job and make money, you know?
What would you say?
I'll just be happy in your own way.
Mm-hmm. Right? Right? Yeah. That would work, yeah. And what are the young kids doing these days? They do what they see on TV and in the movies.
I think all of them in the last few years.
Oh, the statistics, 1 out of 4 11-year-olds in England is having intimate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why not?
What, 11 years?
1 out of 4 11-year-olds. Why not get bigger, you know? And what can the parents say? Just wait, it's too early. Well, if this is the goal of life, this is the best thing in life, why wait? So what you tell your kids? Well, I mean, you know, your father and I, while we were together, neither of us did these kind of things till at least we were 14. You should at least wait till you're 14.
Well, Mom, you know, I mean, you know, get real.
You know,
you got these bodies, what's the big deal?
Then what do you do? If you have your pills, make sure you use your pills. Yeah, all right, yeah, don't worry about that. What wisdom can you give your kids?
I'm from
my
experience, but then they won't follow anything.
They probably won't.
Listen to you.
That's well. Who did you listen to?
Nobody.
Right. Well, I'm just saying the ignorance just perpetuates itself, generation after generation. Therefore, as I said, as long as we don't individually and collectively inquire into the spiritual science, our life is a defeat.
Okay. I don't agree. Why not?
What is the success? What would be the success of a life ignorant of spiritual knowledge?
I know people saying it's just like helping people, making it, say like someone's depressed and you're say a psychiatrist and you speak to them and like you kind of help them to get over from that person.
Can you turn off the light, please? Okay, now we're going to help each other. We can even close the curtains on the window. Close the curtains on the window. Okay, we're really going to help each other. I mean, let's be for real. What would you say about that? Huh? Come on, let's help each other.
Okay, we've got silly examples.
No, it's for real. Let's help each other. And let's care. I mean, just make the best of the situation. We don't know what we're doing. We can't see anything, but let's just make the best of the situation, you know? Right? What would you say? Okay. Okay. For the moment, right? And then what? And what would you say to the doctor? Huh? What would you say? What should we do now?
Psychological class.
You look for someone to help, right?
Oh, yeah.
I have pain! Oh, doctor, I have pain! And what would you do? That solves the problem, huh?
For sure, can find out what's wrong with him.
Okay. You heal me, doc. Now what?
You can literally just kill them.
Okay, you healed me. Now what? What do I do now? Where am I? I still don't know who I am. I'm healed! I'm cured! What should we do? Any other suggestions what we should do? Exactly. Turn the light on. Alright. Similarly, unless we turn the light of spirit of ours, Krishna consciousness on, everything is just a key. Sure, we can grow ground in darkness, and if you want to give back value, you can. But the real quest is to turn the light on so you can see.
No,
too busy. It's not practical. You could say when we were in the darkness,
but we could,
we could amuse ourselves in this situation. So what if we can't see who we are and who anyone else is? So what, And then he said, turn on the light. You want to see what's going on. That is the advantage of the human intelligence. Turn on the lights. The human being has that desire. I want to see reality. So remember this again. We could have let the lights off, and after a while you would have gotten used to doing some things in the dark. Right? But somebody eventually is going to point out, maybe you should turn on the light. Get the whole picture? See what's really going on? Therefore, Krishna consciousness means turning on the light of knowledge. What is the self? What is the supreme self? Am I this body or something else? How did I get this body? What is the ultimate goal of life? Alright, so we'll conclude our lesson there. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Thank you. You can go on. Talking about yourself. And you're my mom. I went fine.
Right. 24.
You're my boy. New York.
Mm-hmm. What
I travel all over the world sometimes.